when your policies work towards holistically improving the economy and the well-being and the well-being of every Australian and Victorian, there is no left or right. There is no such thing as left or right. There is us and the system. And the system is worked out to be against us at the moment. But what we're seeing politically right now, is for the first time in probably 3 years, they actually agreed on something.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Third Opinion. And this week, we are very excited to have with us Andrew Mesia. Andrew is the founder and CEO of a group of businesses which are quite successful here in Victoria. They're called Urban Green Farms, and as well as Happy Soils and Urban Vertical Gardens. Andrew is doing some really exciting work, and he's really dedicated his entire career to the hydroponic industry and has spent significant years in the United States and Canada working in the hemp and cannabis industry. Very exciting. He was primarily in cannabis at that point, but has gained a lot of interest in the hemp industry in Victoria. But I will let him tell you about it. And I'm in the studio with Andrew and with Michael.
Hello,
and I'm Eva. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, Eva. Thank you. And thanks for having me, guys. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, I was so excited to hear about what you're doing and about the recent hemp inquiry. So maybe you can start off by telling us a little bit about you and why did you get involved with all of this?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll try to keep it as short as I possibly can, considering we've got about an hour to this. So I started out my career in the hydroponics industry, as Eva said, in the United States and Australia. Ran a couple of big organizations globally in hydroponics and aquaponics, and eventually came to the conclusion that there's no point in doing anything unless we fix the source of all of our problems, which ends up being our soil. Now, from that point of view, we ended up looking at horticulture holistically and soil being the key to life in itself, and it's spoken about in almost every scripture you can think of. So the significance of it is quite important. But also how that relates to what we can do with hemp in this country and globally.
Are you saying hemp is not a dirty word?
There's nothing dirty about hemp. Actually, in actual fact, I'd be more concerned about the word lumber.
As in
pine.
Old growth forest trees that are being cut down this country at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. There's been a change in Victorian logging recently.
Yeah.
How does that connect in with what you're doing?
Well, it's really interesting because we've been at the forefront of the logging industry, call it dismantling, but it hasn't been something that we're essentially proud of at the same time, because there's jobs on the line here and people's livelihoods as well.
How many jobs are there in that industry, the logging industry in Australia?
Well, look, you're talking about, you know, in Victoria, it's somewhere between, you know, 80 and 120 loggers, actual people that are actually logging the Highland regions, but their families and the supply chain. So you're talking about potentially between 2,500 to 4,000 jobs out in regional Victoria, which is 200 families that are now on benefits, essentially. The government is funding them up to $200 million a year to subsidise their job loss.
Really?
Yeah. And it's extraordinary, the losses to regional Victoria when they're already struggling. And so how do we fix those problems?
So just go back and explain the timeline of the losses of jobs and the decision to stop old growth logging in Victoria, because that was obviously a huge political decision that was made and very important for the environmental future of Australia.
Well, look, we've got to find a balancing act here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking about the largest sequester and store of carbon per hectare in the world, which is the Great Forest National, which we consider to be the Great Forest National Park. And that was led by a particular woman named Sarah Rees, who is a great advocate of the anti-logging movement. But she's not, everyone thinks she's just a greenie, a tree-hugging greenie, but she's not. It's about how to create a more sustainable economy around it. So she's not anti-logging, and neither am I, but I'm anti-ecological destruction. And what Vic Forest was doing out there is ecological destruction, to the extent where they're spying on people. So Sarah was spied on. There was an IBAC investigation into this particular matter, and you can see it anywhere on ABC News. If you just type in Sarah Rees, Vic Forest, you'll find the article, and if you want to read it out, you can.
Yeah, so she said for about 4 days, the professional private investigator says he followed her every move at the request of a state government agency. They told me they wanted me to get as much, they wanted to get as much dirt as I possibly could on the woman, Mr. Davies said. I was of the understanding Sarah Rees was a person of great interest that Vic Forest was trying to shut up. Vic Forest is a Victorian government agency tasked with the supplying of timber from the state forests to sawmills and pulp mills across the strait. It's run as a for-profit company owned by the government.
Your taxpayer dollars at work.
Your taxpayer dollars, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so this private investigator who was following her, what was their intent?
They basically wanted to shut her up in every possible way, considering you're talking about an industry here that was running, it's running at almost above a $50 million loss a year to the taxpayer. So it's an unsustainable industry in itself.
Why? Why would they be running an industry at that sort of loss? Who's to gain?
The government. The government, and in particular, Hancock in particular.
Okay, well, we won't go into the politics behind it, but suffice to say, it doesn't sound like a good idea for anyone or any place to be doing this. You came along, and Sarah came along with a different approach. Tell us about what your plan is.
Well, this is really interesting, and it's actually really exciting at the same time. And I look at the current logging industry is basically being the blockbuster of the movie industry. It's gone. It's obsolete. And the alternative is far more lucrative for the Victorian economy and the Victorian people. And I say that from the point of hemp. And hemp is essentially what I consider to be the potential saviour for the Victorian economy in every possible way.
Why don't we know this? Why hasn't this been allowed sooner, and how come it's allowed now? Can you explain that?
Well, it's still not allowed now. The problem is there's so much red tape and regulatory burden on business to actually activate the industry, and that was essentially to protect the logging industry. And now with the logging industry gone, they're trying to move rapidly through this inquiry. And my recommendation to the Senate, well, to the actual inquiry panel, which included both sides of media, left, right and middle.
When was this? How long ago was the inquiry?
This was on, I think it was the 7th of September. It was around that time. It was around that time where, it was the 7th of September on Thursday.
By 2023?
Which, yeah. By which I sat in the hemp inquiry, and I was questioned regarding the industry and its potential, and I was the only person that really stood up there and said, we don't want your help. We actually want you to get out of the way, deregulate, and get the hell out of the way, in exactly those words.
You know how to be popular, don't you?
Well, it seemed to resonate. It's some, you know, sometimes we have to get to the point of just saying to our political establishment, you don't know what you're doing.
Mm.
Get out of the way and let the free market, the private sector, fix the mess that you've made. And so we're in this position right now where we can fix the economic issues, and that's with hemp.
This inquiry, why did the inquiry happen? Who set that up? Which part of government?
Well, it's funny because I'm considered right-wing. And in actual fact, I'm considered a libertarian, which I actually am. I want no government intervention in anything. Stay out of my private life and I'll stay out of yours.
Mm.
So for me, Rachel Payne from the Legalized Cannabis Party
mm-hmm.
is the one that put me forward. And they're the ones that have actually been advocating for me the most to be out there. Because at the end of the day, there is no left or right. It's us versus big corporates who have a lot to gain, by maintaining the current status quo, and they have a lot to lose from innovation that's disruptive.
Mm.
And that's what we're doing here, innovation that's disruptive.
So Rachel Payne is in Parliament on the basis of trying to free the hemp industry, the cannabis industry. And has she been successful in that, she put forward to have this inquiry? Is that what happened?
Well, yeah, partly, because it was what, from my point of view, I look at it from the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as people think of cannabis,
mm-hmm.
well, they think of hemp, they think of cannabis. There's no demarcations between the two. And this was discussed in detail during my speech to the parliament, where I said to them, there's some major issues here. And the issues are, the legislation is unclear.
Mm.
There's almost zero demarcations between hemp and cannabis, and that sits within the Drug Controlled and Substances Act, which immediately, when you look at the forms for farmers, when they have to download those forms, you need to call up the Department of Agriculture. Then they probe you like you're a criminal before they even give you the form.
In case you're going to smoke some hemp.
Yeah, in case you're going to give yourself an asthma attack or a heart attack.
All right. Well, just a second. I come from the cannabis side of things. Yep. So for people who don't know, they're kind of the same plant, but they're very different in the fact that the cannabis we refer to as THC and CBD is active medical ingredients. And hemp, we're really talking about a plant along the lines of bamboo-ish sort of thing.
Yeah, almost,
and
yeah.
You can use it for fiber and for construction materials, and that's the really big flow-on effect of if we can convert our logging over to hemp growth.
And there's no THC or cannabinoids
Nothing
in hemp.
Goonished.
And people don't know this.
This is the confusion.
It is madness. How did this misunderstanding emerge?
It's not a misunderstanding.
Yeah, exactly.
It is perpetuated on purpose during the UN conventions in the 1960s when they made cannabis and hemp a prohibited drug.
Hemp is a prohibited drug?
Drug, yes. Yes, it was. Essentially,
it was.
I think that goes back to the 20s when the US cotton industry wanted hemp banned.
Yeah, banned because it competed with the cotton industry. Now, cotton processing, for example, uses a lot of petroleum. When you're processing lumber into timber, you still got to use petroleum. When you're actually growing cotton, you need to use synthetic fertilizers, which are made of petroleum. When you're growing hemp, though, you don't use any of those types of chemicals.
None. That's crazy.
Or very, very little.
So it says here, industrial hemp, I'm just pulling up cottonaustralia.com.au, and it says, Industrial hemp requires 3 to 6 megalitres of irrigation water per hectare. There are currently no processing plants or infrastructure in New South Wales and Queensland to deal with the primary processing of industrial hemp. Cotton Australia does not discourage hemp production in Australia, and we wish the industry well. There you go.
Yeah, I'd call that a crock of... Yeah, okay.
So, but there is processing plants in Victoria.
Yeah. Okay. And there is processing... There are some processing plants in New South Wales as well.
And what about the water usage that they were quoting?
Look, the water usage that you're talking about, the plant is resilient.
Mm-hmm.
The plant, that's why it's called weed. Essentially, it grows like a weed.
Mm.
And any of the bureaucrats or the academia, call it whichever universities, I'm not going to mention their name over radio, but all these academia want money to do research and development. You're talking about a 4,000-year-old plant here. It's been researched more than anything in the world. It's like, what are you talking about?
I get
100 researchers a day walking into my shop.
Well, there you go. But do you know every time those researchers come and take their actual
weed,
that's serial coded and barcoded back to the actual root of the plant.
Yep.
So they can check the results and find out how that person is being affected by that drug, whereas we don't do that with anything else, really. We don't do that with opioids.
No.
No, we just hand them out like lollies.
No, but opioids, there was research going on before, but while cannabis was illegal, there was very little research going on, but there's heaps coming through now.
Just in Victoria, like as in Australia. But what about Canada, who's had it legalized for the last... Why do we need to reinvent the wheel?
So tell us about the countries where this is happening, where they're growing hemp and they're commercial hemp and that they're processing it and they're using it within the building industry. What would be the future of Australia look like if we could replicate what's happening in other countries? Give us some examples.
Well, firstly, we shouldn't replicate. We should be the best.
Innovate.
We should innovate. Australia, but more so Victoria, has the opportunity to create a green industrial revolution for the entire country and the globe and set the standard for a new green economy. And it's not very difficult to do. Now, when I put this into perspective, let's have a look at, for example, and I'm going to go back to Vic Forest for a sec because it gives people perspective here. You're talking about a logging industry that was logging 1.8 million hectares allocated to the logging industry, right?
Wow.
Running at a $54 million loss, right? So, and that includes litigation cases against environmental groups and ecological destruction claims and unable to hit quotas and the rest of it. On 1 million acres of high-grade hemp fiber,
mm-hmm,
we would be producing upwards of $70 billion in revenue, GDP, for the state. That's just in the fiber content, not herd, not seed, none of them, just in long-form fiber. Now, when you put that into perspective now, put that into perspective again, and we'll go downstream here. Hemp draws down more carbon and nitrous oxide emissions than any other plant in the world. In actual fact, 3 times more carbon and nitrous oxide emissions than any other plant in the world.
It doesn't say that on the cotton website.
Of course
though.
It doesn't say.
They say, okay, keep going, but it's interesting just to read that and to see what they're trying to say, and they're saying there's all these potential problems with it, and yeah, so it's obviously the source makes a lot of difference in terms
of
what...
Of course it does. Of course it does. And, you know, and I was asked this question by a particular politician. There was a study that was apparently made about hemp seeds and affecting, you know, child defects and birth defects. And I said, well, can you cite me where that study came from and who sponsored it?
Yeah.
She couldn't. I said, so until you find me the sponsor, don't talk to me about the study.
One hectare of industrial hemp can absorb 22 tonnes of carbon dioxide per hectare. It is possible to grow to two crops per year, so absorption is doubled. Does that sound right? Coming out of the role of industrial hemp in carbon farming.
So you can get up to three times. Mm-hmm. Three times. So when we look at the estimate for the hemp industry figures, in reality, so mm-hmm. we look at Canada and the United States mm-hmm. and what they currently do. So let's look at acres versus yield versus carbon sequestration per cycle. And let's say for the sake of this exercise, we're looking at 1 million acres. That's 404,000 hectares of high-grade hemp fiber with an estimated 11 megaton per hectare of sequestration of carbon. That's estimated carbon sequestration per cycle of 33 million tonnes of carbon annually.
Can you compare that to...
Nation's carbon emissions are 400 million megatons. So you're talking about, call it 12.5% mm-hmm. of Australia's entire carbon emissions mm-hmm. offset out of a million acres of high-grade hemp fibre. So, and when you put that into perspective, how much is a megaton of carbon at the moment? You're talking about $50 to $60 of, you know, per ton. Mm-hmm. It's enormous amounts of money. Mm. You're talking up in $150-200 million to $500 million.
Michael,
In the inquiry, I heard mentioned that the mining companies were interested because currently they're paying out mega dollars for the mines that are not being used anymore that could be converted from negative into a massive positive by planting hemp.
And if I could speak more about this particular organisation, I would, but I was bound by an NDA. But what I can say about this organisation is they're very quick. They were very quick to jump on board and figure out, hold on, how do we offset our mining? But not just offset the mining emissions. How do we repair the ecological destruction of these obsolete mining sites that we've destroyed in native land and indigenous title, essentially? So we've been able to prove how we can do that and remediate the soil and fix those mining sites.
So when you grow hemp, what does it do to the soil? Because this is obviously a huge issue, and that's how we've lost so much topsoil through farming.
Well, so you're looking at when you're drawing down carbon, you're rebuilding soil, the soil profile, right? So when you look at a plant like hemp, pesticides are an antibiotic, and then hemp is almost like the probiotic of the soil. It's a filter, and it draws down all that gas that's been up there, which is what they call carbon dioxide, which I think is a complete falsity because it's carbon dioxide's not the problem. It's nitrous oxide emissions, which are far more dangerous than carbon in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
They last for 120 years. It's what you call the ozone killer. And nitrous oxide emissions are caused by what? Pesticides, herbicides.
So what I'm hearing is here is a very simple solution for a giant problem, and it was something that didn't the Daniel Andrews government were planning to stop the logging by when?
Well, it's supposed to be by 2030. But,
that's all.
That was a while ago.
But
now they've, after all the pressure that was put on. Now, we never fought for the complete destruction of the logging industry.
Mm-hmm.
What we fought for was sustainable logging practices. Stick to the plantations and don't destroy your neighbouring farms mm-hmm. with chemicals and pesticides and herbicides that then leach into their farms and kill their animals and crops, which then sends them bankrupt.
Mm.
And then who comes in and takes their farm when they foreclose? The logging industry. So we're talking about working side by side and in synergy with our farmers, our construction industries, our unions, and our output for the state and the country, which we could essentially reinvigorate an entire manufacturing industry here.
Okay, so let me just understand. So you're coming along and you're saying to a farmer, here's something that you can farm without chemicals, with great financial security through mm-hmm. doing this. And when mm-hmm. you farm this, this is being turned into, tell me what's the process? Because apparently it doesn't happen in New South Wales or Queensland. It only happens in Victoria.
Well, this is really interesting because this is my life's work now.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I've been looking at from the point of how do we close the loop on our supply chain problems as well as support our industries, our unions, our manufacturing sectors as well that are completely obliterated. We couldn't even make a kebab anymore by ourselves. we're outsourcing that to China these days, for God's sake. Like, come on. We've essentially become a banana republic, as I say. We mine stuff, we send it overseas, and we buy it back more expensive.
But we don't grow bananas, so we couldn't even be a banana republic.
Well, we used to until we had a Panama disease outbreak in far north Queensland. And we're not going to go into conspiracy here, but we used to have a great thriving banana industry, and until Panama disease broke out. And that was the usage of pesticides and herbicides. And, you know, when you deplete the soil's ability and its own natural immune system. So what pesticides essentially do is they go into the soil and they disrupt the communication pathways in the soil.
Like antibiotics.
Like antibiotics.
It changes the balance and then the outputs are reduced. And there's nothing that balances that at the moment.
Except for some of our products, which I'm not going to go into selling our products.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about your products is that they are a probiotic and they've been developed. I've seen that in India they also develop something similar and that this is the new way forward because they recognize that rather than trying to put external inputs into the soil, you're trying to create an environment which it nurtures growth. In the most natural way.
Its own immune system. Because
it's like vitamin D for the soil.
Well, yeah, almost. Well, you know, we look at it from the point of, let's have a look at, you know, your metabolism is, your gut is almost endemically identical to soil. So, you know, soil's got its own, it's alive.
Mm-hmm.
It's got its own microbiome. Like one teaspoon of soil has more microbes in it than all of humanity combined, every human being on this planet.
Incredible.
So you're talking about a very powerful source here that we spit on. We basically destroy it while we're looking at what's not important. It's the most important ecological asset, and the only way that we can repair that really quickly right now as whilst gaining from it, is hemp.
Wow.
Is hemp. Because you're talking about ecological restoration, drawdown, fiber, industry development, transportation, and they talk about water, the amount of water that it needs.
Mm-hmm.
But what the cotton industry is talking about is
poisoning the water.
Is poisoning. Yeah, yeah. Let's poison the soil so we can grow the cotton.
Yeah.
But where does that poison go? It goes back into the water plains and into our drinking water and kills local wildlife.
And us.
And everything else. And us. Essentially, you get chronically ill over 20, 30 years. And as you get ill, where do you go? You go into the pharmaceutical arm of the agricultural companies.
So we're going to get back to the positive things.
Yep, sorry.
Okay, so you've got the hemp growing.
Yep.
It's helping to reinvigorate the soil. Yeah. What do you do with the fiber? Where is it going? Here we are in Victoria. Where do I send it? I've got a farm with 100 acres. I've just grown some hemp because Andrew told me to. what do I do with it? I'm happy that I don't have to deal with pesticides. I don't have to fight things. It's a weed, so it doesn't take too much care.
Show me the money,
baby. Now, I'll tell you how this works, right?
So okay.
We've got a program called the Soil Savior Program. It's an end-to-end solution for farmers and people who want to grow hemp.
Mm-hmm.
So from the application process, all the way through to your seed and your harvest and the monitoring of that growth as well, to finally, once you slash it, we also provide a guaranteed purchase agreement of that fiber.
And wow.
It's sitting at about $3,000 to $3,500 a pound at the moment. And then we take it from there and we have it processed at iHemp in Victoria, which is a guy named Darren Darren Christie's really great operator who makes hemp bricks and structural timber.
How long has he been doing this for, and how good is the products?
I've never seen anything like it. So, you know, we're talking about hemp here. Is, you know, hemp bricks are a fire retardant. So you could put a blowtorch to hemp, to a hemp brick. It would take you half an hour to burn through it.
They should make some cladding for all the apartments that need to be replaced.
Well, there you go.
Is it like a brick? They make them the same size as a lighter?
No. They're far lighter and they're bigger, but they're also self-insulating.
Mm-hmm.
You won't get termites through mm-hmm. them. So you don't have these types of issues.
Are they like Besser blocks? Are they that
kind almost.
Of,
it's right. almost like big Lego blocks. Mm. Like, think of Lego.
Yeah.
And then they're big-ass Lego blocks. Sorry. Mm. Shouldn't have said that. But sorry.
Beep. What colour? They're brown?
They're essentially like a cream, colour. Yeah.
Are we seeing it in houses anywhere around? Because we walked by that house the other day and it looked like it was made of Besser bricks, which was the old, you know, concrete blocks they used in the 60s.
Yeah,
would
kind
that
of.
Possibly be
yeah.
the same?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
All right.
Also,
absolutely.
When you said they're shaped like Lego bricks, do you need concrete to lay them?
Or no.
You
no,
just
no,
make
no.
them like Lego?
No. You quite literally drop them in and you use hemp again. So we turn it into a cement that's then used as a mortar. Like right. if you jump online onto YouTube and have a look at the first Australian home that was 3D rendered.
Right.
It was made with a 3D machine out of hemp.
Oh.
It was made in 2 days. The house was built in 2 days.
Wow.
You know, using a 3D machine, and it was just poured over. It's three times stronger than cement. And keep in mind that we actually do have a shortage of sand. Go figure. Sand that's actually usable for cement.
Mm.
So, you know, this is a way to supplement. It's I call it an alien plant.
We also it's have a shortage plant. Of labour in the building industry.
Absolutely.
You could put a house up in 2 days.
If you jump in there and just type in hemp home 3D Australia. There it
is. Inside Australia's 3D printed hemp houses. Yeah.
So you're talking about houses that are built in 2 days, but what's actually quite significant about this is even as bricks – hemp continues to draw in carbon. So those bricks continue to draw. They absolutely do. They continue to draw in carbon. So you can embed the carbon credits in those bricks and you'll continue to generate carbon credits from them. So we're talking about carbon is based as a dollar now, essentially. You know, they're mm-hmm. trying to bring it in as a currency.
Tell me about the timber option.
Yeah, so, you know, we talk about timber, you know, for example, timber is quite heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're talking about you got to log the tree, process the tree, well, you got to move it, process it. Whereas you're talking about fiber here that almost looks like hay. And it's easily transported. It can be used as structural timber because what we do is we process it down on the hammer. It's basically like a hammering machine.
Mm-hmm.
That runs, it tills it through until, and different profiles of different seeds and different plants or different species of the plant, or different varietals of hemp produce different outputs for what we need. And in this case, structural timber is also far stronger than pine itself. Keep in mind, the first car that was ever made was made of hemp.
Wow.
And, driving on cannabis.
Well, they banned him. They banned him from using it.
That's crazy. So and why was that at the time? It was also seen as
you're talking
interfering
about
with
competition.
Industry.
Yeah, you're talking about an industry that was manufactured out of World War II.
Ford's 1941 bioplastic Model T was made of hemp, flax, wheat, and spruce pulp. Almost sounds like breakfast, doesn't it? Which makes the car lighter than fiberglass and 10 times tougher than steel, wrote the New York Times on February the 2nd, 1941. The car ran on ethanol made from hemp or other agricultural waste. Oh, my goodness. Back to the future. Isn't that crazy?
So, you know, they had it right back then.
Yeah.
But you're talking about special interest in petroleum.
Got hijacked.
Mm. And so... Now let's go to 1960s where the convention came out and they pulled a propaganda game to call it marijuana. Hey. And they moved that into the UN and people think they outlawed cannabis because of, well, they outlawed hemp because of cannabis. No, they don't care about you smoking weed. They don't care. They outlawed cannabis because of hemp and its potential.
Yeah,
I want the politicians to stick to what is the core fundamental things that we need to fix our economy. Mm-hmm. And our construction industry is one of the most important, but also our farming nation.
Mm-hmm.
I always come back to the point of our farmers are the heart of this country. They're the backbone of the country, while our construction industry is the heart of the country. So for me, it's bricks, lumber, structural timber, and even paper to a degree.
Mm-hmm. How are the farmers responding to all of this?
Farmers want to jump on board. And what I've been pushing the government to do is deregulate. And the reason being is by the time you put through an application, they've confused the absolute hell. Well, firstly, my experience. Well, let's talk about my experience here with the department itself. And I'll tell you this very quickly. They sent me on a wild goose chase, firstly. They said to me, here's your application. They sent me to the TGA to get a medical cannabis license, which is probably about, you know, at that point you're talking about multi-millions of dollars to actually get this through the line. But a farmer doesn't know the difference. So I called the Department of Ag and said, no, I think you're confused. I don't want a TGA medical cannabis license. I want a hemp license.
Yeah.
And they still hadn't sent it to me. So I sat on the phone and said, you're going to read me out every form you have until you give me the right one.
Yeah.
She was like, this one, that's the one. Send me that one now. So she sent me the right form.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout this entire process, I was feeding the feedback.
Every step.
Every step of the way to these politicians who wanted me to test the program to see why farmers weren't jumping on board. It was too hard, too complex, no demarcations. If it's not simple for the farmer, you've lost him.
Yeah.
He's too busy. He's knee-deep in cow manure.
Yeah,
he's not going to be sitting there trying to fill out complex forms and business plans.
So we've solved the problem. How?
So on my platform at Urban Green Farms, we set up a farmers portal.
Urbangreenfarms.com.au. Yep.
And if you go to regenerative agriculture under there, there's a tab called Farmer Support, Hemp Farming Support, by which you can go straight through, see the whole process, download the forms. And we can actually, it's an online form, and we take care of everything from that point. As soon as it hits the Department of Agriculture, we're dealing with them.
Wow.
From start to finish.
You could have got a grant from the Department of Agriculture to make this form for them.
Well, you know what? You know what's really funny? I said to them, they said, do you have any recommendations on the form? I said, yeah, I do. It should be a one-pager. And Bev McCarthy, the MP of Liberal, said, well, can you give us an example? I said, well, is it billable? Because is it billable? And she said, we're giving you a leg up here. I said, I'm joking. I'm not going to charge you for the form because it's already on our website. Go in and fill it out yourself. It's very simple. So
I'm seeing this here. How big would my farm need to be to put this in? Can I grow this on my 1 acre block I need 100 acres, 1,000?
Well, it depends on your modelling. Depends on your modelling and the type of farm that you want. So, you could grow bicycle. So you could grow hemp on one cycle and then your tomatoes the next cycle and then, whatever you want to do.
So it's improving the quality of the soil so it's going to make it easier for me to make big tomato sauces.
And the amount of times I've heard people say, I'm buying tomato, I need hydroponic equipment for tomatoes. I'm like, yeah, okay.
You could grow asparagus.
We should have so much tomatoes in this state.
You'd grow asparagus in the second season and see which is stronger, asparagus at drawing the soil or hemp at regenerating the soil.
Well, yeah, you could. You could, and why not?
Is there much research? Is anyone researching what it does to the soil? Is anyone looking at the microbiome of the soil?
Absolutely.
And who's doing all that?
Well, there's heaps of evidence. There's heaps of studies that have been done on it. We're talking like MIT University. We're talking large universities, the Nottingham University, Cambridge, all these universities running studies on it. In Canada, they've been running studies on it for 20 years. So why do we have to do it? And as Bev McCarthy said, you know, during that during the inquiry, she turned around to me and said, "Well, we don't need to do research. I agree with you. It's already been done. We'll just Google us. I'll give you the data. I've got all the data you need."
How did they respond? So you went in to the hemp inquiry. How did everyone? You said everyone agreed. Wasn't there division?
No, and I think this is where, I think this is what kind of stumped a lot of people in the panel, is that when your policies work towards holistically improving the economy and the well-being and the well-being of every Australian and Victorian, there is no left or right. There is no such thing as left or right. There is us and the system. And the system is worked out to be against us at the moment. But what we're seeing politically right now, is for the first time in probably 3 years, they actually agreed on something.
Mm.
There was a middle ground. And when you find middle ground policies, you find more commonality between people than differences, whether you identify as a tree trunk or whatever you want to do. But do you know what I mean? It's like
a leaf or a flower.
It becomes irrelevant.
Yeah.
Those social issues become irrelevant. It's like a business. Mm. How do you fix business culture? People go, but the culture of the business is bad. It's either the owner or the finances. You fix a financial problem, the culture's fixed.
I think you've also got a unique opportunity right now, because with the collapse of the logging and that land out there that needs to be transferred to something, then now's the time to get your foot in the door. And it really could be a revolution. I mean, we're talking about major industries in this country that could be brought back to this country.
Absolutely.
How does it give jobs to the logging industry, people that are now on welfare
reskill them?
Is there any program in place yet for that?
No. And this is where we need to actually start building. This is where the government has to do its bit. We can only go so far.
Mm-hmm.
We can provide the jobs that are required. There needs to be a reskilling. And, you know, we're talking about coal miners who have been in their jobs for 20, 30 years who are now, you know, going into hemp, or a logger who is, you know, logging trees, now is working a farm, or he's now in the transportation or the processing side of it. It's a very different ballgame, but it's still a regional job. You're creating regional jobs. And you're talking about food and fibre industry. Now, we've got a section within the government. It's called, you know, the future of food and fibre, a fibre industry. So it's called, you know, future food and fibre industries. And they link that to STEM education for children.
Mm.
And so you're talking about industry development that has to happen. And if we don't evolve with economic development, then we're going to be left behind.
Andrew, if I'm a farmer an ex-logger who's lost my job, is there somewhere I can go to start to learn about this? Is there anyone out there running workshops? Are you going around? Is there a way that we can be connected through this? That the first step would be to hear about it in more depth and then start to understand the sort of skills that are needed. Is there anything like that yet?
There's some associations. The only one that I really would recognise is iHemp, because Darren's actually doing the work in real life, mm-hmm. like we are. Everyone else seems to want grants from the government or a handout to start their businesses. That's what we've been trained to do. They all want a handout.
Darren get a local supply of hemp currently?
Yeah, but it's in short supply, so he's always struggling to get high grade hemp.
Yep.
And, you know, we can do that if our farmers are immobilized properly and the government gets out of the way.
So high upgrade hemp means that you've been able to take care of the soil to ensure that they're balancing the way it's growing? Like, what do you mean by high grade? How do you improve the quality of hemp as it grows? Like, what does it need?
It's nutrient based.
So this is the sort of work that you do. Yep. So you have a way of looking at soil and assessing whether it's got the right balance of nutrients for growing.
We can essentially almost guarantee that the fiber will be high grade if it's sitting within our program. So if it's sitting within the soil savior program, we've got drones that we fit out with hyperspectral imaging cameras that can actually see into the soil and profile.
Crazy. So you're saying that you can see with your drones, you can test the soil from a distance without anyone being involved.
We can also input CEC probes. They're called CEC probes, carbon exchanging probes.
Mm-hmm.
They go into the ground about 3 meters underground, and we can quite literally network carbon sequestration and exchange and issue out carbon credits to the farmer directly via the carbon coin, which is on the Stellar platform, which was developed by Sarah Reese's husband. So, you know, we're talking about passive income all the time, and it's a reward for actually growing organically and regeneratively.
Amazing.
As well.
It's amazing. Wow. Well, anyone out there, so there are some people listening. What would be their next step?
Call me.
What do you think is the smallest acreage that would make it a viable business?
Oh, look, you know what? At the moment, I'll say the smallest that we're dealing with is 50 acres. And, you know, he's starting out and we're looking at, you know, even on 50 acres he's probably clearing about 200 grand cycle, but not, you know, not profit.
Yeah.
You're talking about a 76% GP on all of that. And so, you know, he's probably netting about 150 grand a cycle.
How far can people be? Because if you're going to be using these drones, like if someone's in far, you know, Queensland or in New South Wales, is it possible for you to still be checking the soil, ensuring that the soil is...
Mate, you could be in Baghdad and I can check the soil. You could be on the other side of the world. As long as I've got my probes in there.
Really?
We can see what the hell's going on in your soil.
Wow.
It's basically the Facebook of soil. So, you know, we're talking about it's disruptive innovation that is going to change the game on your big chemical, conventional agricultural company.
I think we should do this from now on. We should only have people that tell us positive things about the future.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
No negatives unless you've got an answer to it.
Yeah.
You know what? And I always say this, and I've been saying this for the last 3 years, is we need to provide hope and solutions-based politics and economy, and the only way that we can bring left and right together is through economic development and innovation. And that's going to come out of young people who are innovative, not old fossils. Simple as that.
I'm just really happy that you've come speak with us.
Thank you.
And
anytime.
This is The Third Opinion. Thank you for listening.